Hi, this is Alexander Rossi, 2008 Formula BMW, America's and World Final Champion, and you're listening to F1Weekly.com.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser Hamid is on assignment. This is podcast number 335, March 29th, 2009. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by the Jim Russell Rotax Challenge and Marin Karting. Check them out. You know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen. And, of course, we love Jim Russell Karting, especially since I got to participate.
Yeah. So there you have. Too bad it wasn't completely free for you. But
that's okay. Not completely free, but almost. Yes. Anyway, welcome to the first race of the 2009 Formula One World Championship season. We're in Melbourne. It's fall. The leaves are starting to come down the trees. But the atmosphere is there. And I'm pretty excited. We've been waiting for this. It seems like the longest off-season.
The longest off-season in recent memory.
Especially
with all the changes in the cars. It's exciting waiting to see what was going to transpire this weekend with, you know, all of the technical changes and curves
and the diffusers and everything. Will the front wings be knocked off left and right? And not only that, but the look of the cars, I particularly feel that they look pretty good now that we're getting used to it with the slicks. And, of course, Williams in practice looking outstanding. Nico Rosberg.
Insane. Yeah, Rosberg looking really good.
It was between Braun and the Toyota-powered Williams.
And the Toyotas.
And
even.
The Toyotas looked very good. But in the end, they were caught doing sneaky stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Making a little technical mistake.
Well, I don't know if it's a technical mistake, but it sure reminded me of when Toyota was in the World Rally Championship many years ago. And they were caught doing sneaky stuff.
Maybe they brought some of those guys over.
I don't know. But let's go right to qualifying. Fissi goes out first. And away we go.
And the weekend has really begun now that we're actually getting ready to qualify for the first race of the season. First session was kind of interesting. A lot of fun watching it because everybody's out on track and everybody's doing multiple laps. You know, you've got none of this stuff like we were seeing last season where the top two teams would go out for three and back in, you know.
Well, that's because that was the exciting part, is everybody didn't know where everybody was.
Right, and not only that, had no idea what kind of time was going to be needed to get out of the first session.
And a lot of teams knocked testing, saying those aren't real testing numbers. But in the end, testing really was a good indicator and barometer where the teams were.
Yeah, once we got on track, it really panned out as to what we saw in testing as to how quick some of these cars really were.
Exactly. With the session starts, 13 minutes to go. Kaz and Nico Rosberg are up at the top. Kimi Raikkonen and Felipe Massa, which we sort of expect. I mean, a Ferrari is still a Ferrari. And, of course, Nelson Piquet looked okay at the beginning.
Yeah, actually, at the beginning of the session, he was looking actually kind of fast, but his time didn't hold up very long.
Exactly, and Williams continued to dominate. Even Fernando went to the top of the timesheets with 10 minutes to go, which made me giggle and happy. But, of course, in the end, Lewis Hamilton looked pretty good. But give us a rundown of what happened in Q1.
In Q1, out are in 16th is Buemi in the Toro Rosso, followed by Nelson Piquet in 17th. 18th is Fizzy. 19th is Sutil, both in the Force India Mercedes cars. And then 20th, for the first time in his Formula One career, Bourdais qualifies dead last. He won't start there, but he does finished the first session with the slowest time on the track, almost 2/10 slower than Sutil. I think what we see here is kind of a forecast maybe for what we might see for the rest of the season, is that we're probably going to end up with the usual suspects in that first session getting tossed. But we shall see.
I hope not. I mean, I think Toro Rosso is a good team. Obviously, they showed a lot of good pace last year when they had Sebastian Vettel. I refuse to give all that credit to just one driver. The team did pick up the pace. Even Bourdais looked pretty good occasionally.
Yeah. And typically, Toro Rosso has a hard time in the first 3-4 races just because they don't test. You know,
exactly.
Their car's only been on track for one session this in the preseason. So a little tough to get ahead of the game when you're not spending enough time on track with your car.
But on the other hand, not much Braun testing was there, Stephen.
No, but also you got to remember, too, that the Braun car design was started
back in 1974.
Exactly. Like 3 months or a month before this season started. Yeah, a month before last season started.
And in Q2, of course, we have a little bit of excitement because towards the end, Lewis Hamilton has a gearbox problem and will not participate.
Actually, yeah, we find out that Lewis is not going to participate. He does not set a time in the second session. Apparently lost fourth gear and is going to take a gearbox change. So even before we finish the day, we've already got one member of the field taking a penalty for a violation.
Exactly. And, of course, Sebastian Vettel looking very strong in Q2.
Very good.
Almost at the top all the time. Of course, we've got the Jensen Buttons, the Mark Webbers, Timo Glock, and Rubinho.
Yeah, I was actually impressed by the pace of the Red Bull, even in both Mark Webber and Sebastian Vettel's hands. They were looking pretty strong, unusually stronger than the Renaults. They typically haven't been able to keep up with the Renaults. But this weekend, they had a little bit of an advantage on.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to aerodynamics. A lot of people say the front of the Renault looks like a pig. And on the other hand, you have the Adrian Newey-designed Red Bull that's Renault-powered and obviously outpacing both
Renaults. Yeah, and if you look at the Red Bull, it's one car that has a really completely different look on that nose than anybody else.
And it's a good-looking car.
Kind of got those two ridges running along the front.
Correct.
And nobody else is doing that. The other thing that I wondered, too, is the Red Bull running Kurs?
None of the Red Bulls are running Kurs.
I'm wondering if the weight penalty of running Kurs in the Renault is what's actually hurting them.
It could be because, second, it's going to take a few races to get used to Kurs. Third, this track I don't think was a great track to start with Kurs. I think you could have skipped it and saved the weight penalty. Now, next week's race will be different because you have the long straights in Malaysia where you can really use that extra 80 horsepower.
Yeah.
But here, and I think some drivers will be better with Kurs than others.
And it was interesting to watch some of the drivers and when they were using it. I know they showed Raikkonen, and he used it going onto the back straight and then coming off one of the later corners on the back end of the track. And then I think it was Moss I saw one time who was already halfway through the course and had, you know, just a tiny bit left his Kurs.
I'm suspect of Kimi Raikkonen's Kurs. I don't know if you noticed, but his button didn't say Kurs. Everybody had labels. His said Finlandia, so not sure what's going on there. But in the end, the people with Kurs, I think, did suffer. Nick Heidfeld is out in Q2. He's running Kurs, much, you know, lighter. Kubica, I think, does an outstanding job without Kurs. So I think Kurs really...
Well, the one thing they mentioned is that one of the things the FIA did, and I'm not sure I like this, if you're going to basically bring in this new item that you're going to use, then the weight penalty for not using it should be equal to or greater than using it, because I think what's happening is the Kurs system is very heavy. And basically, if you don't use it and you use it, the variation isn't significant enough to make the advantage of having that little extra horsepower during the lap worth it.
I agree completely.
Look at the BMWs. You know, there's a really good example of what you've got is you've got one guy running it and one guy not, and the guy that wasn't running it actually was doing better.
Absolutely. And Nick Heidfeld suffered the consequences. So there you have it. So Nick Heidfeld, is out. Fernando Alonso is out as I teared up and cried in my beer. And, of course, Kaz Nakajima, Heikki Kovalainen was out too. And Lewis Hamilton, as we said at the top of Q2 coverage, that he was out with some gearbox problems and didn't put in a time.
Yeah, and looking at the time that Heikki set down, it's a good chance that Louis may not have made it out of Q2 anyway.
Exactly.
The McLarens weren't sandbagging.
No.
in the practices or in the testing, and they've got some work to do. And I seriously expect, I know that the hearing in before the World Motor Council on the rear diffuser item is supposed to happen between Malaysia and China. And I seriously expect to see teams like Ferrari and McLaren and probably even Renault with redesigned diffusers in place by China.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not going to waste their time waiting to find out. They're going to get one in there to see if they can improve their times.
Yeah, but I think some of these teams have bigger issues than just a diffuser.
Yeah, I think Renault may have a little bit of an aerodynamic issue going that's hurting them. One of the things I noticed that was kind of weird about the Adrian Newey design, he's got like this little teardrop thing down under the front of his nose that was kind of interesting looking. Don't typically like an old radar dome from a World War II vintage aircraft.
There you go. And then hopefully Flavia was filing a protest against that as well, as far as I'm concerned.
On to the final session.
Exactly. And it was classic at the beginning. You had Felipe Massa, Kimi Raikkonen, Jarno Trulli, Jenson Button doing a pretty good job. But then at the final 2 minutes, when everybody goes in for those fresh, soft tires that degrade rather quickly, that,
yeah,
and we'll see that
like
in the race.
Two good laps really out of them, and then after that you're kind of, you know, trying to hang on.
Yeah, and I think Bridgestone needs to address that situation.
Well, part of what they've done and what the FIA has asked them to do is basically, instead of using consecutive compounds, is to gap the compounds.
Right.
And I like the idea. I don't know if I like what it does.
I think the gap was a little too big.
The problem is that you don't have, you know, what are you going to go, softs and hards instead of mediums and super softs?
I don't know.
You know, the whole thing about using two car compounds during the race really kind of grates on me too. It's one of those kind of like, ooh, well, we've only got one tire supplier. Let's come up with something to spice up the tires.
I know, and a lot of people think that the tires shouldn't be a significant issue in racing, but I'm afraid they are. And that's why I prefer two tire manufacturers with a tire war.
Yeah,
because then you really had the excitement that Bridgestone is trying to elevate a little bit with these non-consecutive compounds, which I don't think is that exciting.
Yeah, no. It adds a little spice, but I actually think that in the race it actually creates a problem and actually causes an accident.
There you go, Steven. So we'll email the FIA and Max Mosley right after this program.
So to wrap up qualifying, the bronze take the first row. Jenson Button takes pole, Barrichello in two. Second row will be Vettel and Kubica, followed by Rosberg and Glock on row three, with Massa and Trulli in row four, and then Raikkonen and Webber in row five. But by the time we get to the grid, we find out that the Toyotas will not be starting in the top 10. They'll be starting in the last two positions.
Flexi wings are back.
Woohoo! Flexi wings!
But I think it's a sneaky thing. If they knew their wing was a little bit too flexible,
They probably knew it was right on the edge and were hoping that it would pass the test, and it didn't.
You get some calipers out, you measure the thickness or the gauge, and you know if it's going to flex
too much or not. You know what the stiffness of your wing is. You can run the test before you put it on the car.
It's called a wind tunnel?
Yeah. Well, not only that, it's called do the test that the stewards are going to do to your car before you put it on, and you know whether or not it's going to be.
Exactly, and I think it's a big bummer for the drivers. You know, I mean, the drivers are not going to be scrutinizing whether everything is legal in the car. Of course, the diffusers were the big story of the week, but in the end, for Toyota, it was a rear flexi wing.
Yeah, and that hurts to basically qualify. I think they were saying that that's the best 1-2 qualifying for Toyota in probably like 3 years. You know, typically we've seen Trulli get into the final session, but usually he qualifies eighth.
Yeah, well, he's a good qualifier.
And he always has been. But to basically qualify well and then end up at the back of the grid, they end up running a reasonably good race, but not good.
Man, of course, the end of the qualifying session, the beginning of the Cinderella story, the brawn of the Braun team, and Jenson Button getting pole was exciting, but for a moment there, I wasn't as surprised as I thought a lot of people seemed to be surprised. I mean, in testing, they showed pace. Masha last week said Braun is going to be a problem. They're a second faster than everybody else.
Right, and they looked good in practice. They weren't topping out the timesheets, but they were looking solid. You know, they were top five, I think, in all three sessions. So we knew that something was going to go on. And then what we find out, we're getting published fuel loads now, and they weren't even running light.
No, the Braun is fast, period. And it seems to be dependable.
More dependable than it was when it was a Honda.
Yeah, so congratulations to Jenson Button, formerly known as Jenson Button, and of course, Rubinho.
First team since March to qualify 1-2 in their first outing. In their debut race.
Well, we have a little snippet of the historical data there on our front page about Mercedes, 1954, Juan Manuel Fangio, so on and so forth. We'll have more on that on the following podcast, the midweek podcast, when Nasser Hamid comes back with a moment in motorsports history. Let's go right to the Australian Grand Prix. Exciting stuff. There must have been some butterflies with the Braun 1-2, Rubinho, Jenson Button.
These two guys, Rubinho's been up at the front of the grid before.
Next to Schumacher many times.
When he was with Ferrari, but I don't think Jenson's ever started from the first
row. He's had pole at this track before.
Oh, okay. So, you know, he's been there before, but it's been a while.
Exactly, that's the problem.
But was with Williams that he was on the front row? He didn't do it in a Honda, did he?
No, he did it in a Honda.
Okay.
BAR, for a while, had a fairly decent car. They just nosedived towards the end of their legacy. But in the end, Sebastian Vettel doing an outstanding job leading the second row. And I felt sorry for the Ferraris because, once again, you could tell they were going to struggle. And on the other hand, this is also a big season for Heikki Kovalainen. He's got to prove that he's machismo. Nelson Piquet also has to prove he's machismo, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and actually, probably my biggest disappointment for this season is the fact that we only have one rookie driver this year, which is really, in the years that I've watched,
Sebastian Olivier Buemi.
Yeah, Buemi. And he's, you know, every other year that I've watched so far, you know, there's been at least three.
Yeah, no, it's pretty interesting. What's really weird is Sebastian Bourdais' middle name is the same.
Wow.
It's Olivier. So I don't know what's going on over there, but it's Sebastian Olivier Buemi and Sebastian Olivier Bourdais. And, of course, Bourdais has to have a good season, too, because if not, this will be definitely his last season
in
Formula One, and he'll move on to other categories.
Yeah, more than likely him. He'll get a ride in DTM, World Touring.
Le Mans.
Yeah, who knows? Maybe go back to... Can probably get back into the Indy.
Hopefully his 401k is starting to pick up again.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, let's go right to the start. The roll-off is good. No stalls. No waving of the arms. Which is good. First race, new season, new cars. I sort of expected somebody to do something weird, you know?
Stall. Well, somebody kind of does.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, the red lights go out. And Jenson Button has it together, has a really good start.
Excellent start. Bang, Schumacher-esque, gone, out of the way.
Fernando-esque from the 2005-06 season. A very nice start. Jenson Button shows that he could be machismo.
Yeah. And think Rubens may have been looking at his press clippings or something.
I am not sure what Mourinho was saying.
He was distracted right
but before apparently he hit the anti-stall button. Apparently it's some kind of Lewis Hamilton thing, hitting the wrong button. But he recovers fairly well after losing some positions. But it was very exciting. And Rubinho probably maybe was a little too nervous. You know, it's nobody expected him to be in Formula One in 2009. Yeah. I thought he'd be opening up a pizza shack with Tony Kanaan over in Seattle.
And or, you know, looking for a ride in another series.
Exactly. Sebastian Vettel, Felipe Massa, Robert Kubica, Kimi Raikkonen, Nico Rosberg, and Rubinho behind Rosberg, Kaz Nakajima, and Nelson Piquet. Nick Heidfeld, by the second lap, has a puncture.
Too bad. Does not do well. There was a little bit of schlamazel going around.
There's a bit of schlamazel going on, and of course...
And actually, Rubinho ends up running his entire first stint with a partially damaged front wing.
Right, and he was hit by Heikki Kovalainen.
Yeah, and Heikki ends up losing out on that one. But it was interesting that he ran that entire stint and really did not see any kind of drop-off in performance, even though he was pretty much missing the end plate on one side of his front wing.
And his diffuser had been damaged by Heikki Kovalainen, who, by the end of the second lap, was going slow. Also, Mark Webber needed a new front wing as well. And we expected these huge flying wings to get knocked around.
Well, not only that, and the fact that even looking in the onboard cameras, you can't see that wing. Imagine what it's like for the drivers. You know, it's kind of like going, well, I know that I got to keep people, you know, 2 feet away from my front tire kind of thing. You can't see it down there.
Exactly. Lap two, Jenson Button, fast lap of the race with a 1:30.612, and Heikki Kovalainen is out. Too much damage on the car.
He ended up breaking that left front suspension completely off. He ended up dragging that around most of the track
exactly.
To get back to the
lap place. Three, Sebastian Vettel says, do not forget me, 1:29.752. And during that moment, Lewis Hamilton is passing Giancarlo Fisichella.
Yeah, Button's already starting to stretch out his lead.
He's got a little bit of a lead, but Sebastian Vettel is keeping up.
He's not with letting Button. Him get too far ahead.
And I'm impressed with the way Vettel is driving the Red Bull, the Renault Power Red Bull. It's got pace, and with his skills, I think we're going to see a lot of this young man throughout the season.
Yeah, I think so too.
Lap four. Fast lap of the race. Sebastian Vettel again with a 1:28.999. On the following lap, Jenson Button answers with a 1:28.787. And on lap five, we see Lewis Hamilton chasing Nelson Piquet Jr. And for a moment there, Nelson looked like he had some testicular fortitude.
Yeah, and I think really what ends up... He ends up losing out to Hamilton is because Hamilton's running the soft tires and he's still got enough of that tire left to give him just that touch more pace getting through the corners, and that eventually is...
And Hamilton, I think, is using curves a little bit better than some of the other teams.
Yeah, I think he may be a little more judiciously picking his spots that's benefiting him, especially when he's chasing somebody down. So far, it seems... Because the one thing I noticed, that when they didn't show enough of the graphic that showed the drivers using it, but... It seemed to me that a lot of them were always using it in the same spot on the course every time, whether they were in traffic or not. And I think you need to think that out a little bit more. Sometimes, you know, you can probably keep up with a guy without using it and then look for your spot to give you just that little bit more to get past somebody.
And to be honest with you, I'm not sure if the drivers, without communications from their garage, that they know whether they're fully charged or halfway charged, KERS-wise. Because a lot of times the radio communications, which we are getting more this season from all the teams, often you would hear the paddock radio in saying, you are fully charged now, fully charged. And I'm not sure what was going on.
We think there would be a graphic on their steering wheel.
There was so much going on in the steering wheel.
Yeah, and then also you've got the other issue, too, with these guys having to run their front wing adjustment.
Exactly. So multitasking is the name of the game here.
Exactly.
Lap six, Sebastian Vettel, another fast lap with a 1:28.424. And Nico Rosberg on lap seven is chasing Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen struggling a little bit with the tires, and on that lap, Sebastian Vettel answers again with a fast lap at 1:28.235. He does it again on the following lap with a 1:28.140, and he's beginning to not only keep up with Button, but he's making some headway.
Yeah, he's actually starting to reel him in. Interesting that they say that Hamilton managed to use his curves to get past PK. Obviously, PK wasn't using it to block, using his curves to block.
Yeah, well, PK's, that's another story for another podcast. Rubens Barrichello on lap 8 is catching Nico, and Kimi Raikkonen is holding up those two guys, Nico Rosberg and Rubens Barrichello. No pace. You could see where Rubinho and Nico were faster than the Ferrari.
And they just weren't getting to him quite quick enough. And I think maybe Kimi was using his curves to advantage to kind of hold them off as long as he could.
He was trying, but he ran out of curves. And on lap 9, Nico Rosberg passes Kimi Raikkonen, and then Rubinho passes him as well. On lap 10, Sebastian Bourdais is in the pits. Then after that, Kimi Raikkonen pits, Jarno Trulli pits, and on the following lap, Felipe Massa pits. So there you have it. Ferrari was a lot lighter.
Significantly lighter than, basically as light as anybody on the grid. And basically that's how they ended up getting their positions. Seems odd, weird to see that from Ferrari. But again, they, like McLaren, are trying to figure out why they don't have the pace.
Not only that, but the other issue was not necessarily a lack of fuel or it was time to refuel. The teams that started out with that soft compound, the degradation was tremendous. And that was the biggest problem, was tires.
Yeah.
The Bridgestones were becoming Brickstones.
Well, no, that you end up with no tire and makes it tough. I think a lot of, and it was interesting to see the two strategies were start on it, burn it out, get on the mediums, or run as long as you could on the mediums and then get the softs at the end. We see this with the Dubrons, that when they go in there for their second stop, they sit there for 12 seconds getting fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're going to run that late into the race on the medium tires.
Lewis Hamilton pits on lap 11, and you could tell his tires are the problem. Robert Kubica pits as well. And after all these pit stops, Giancarlo Fisichella is actually looking pretty sweet in the Force India because he's in P8 with Fernando Alonso right behind him.
Yeah, basically the two Force Indias did a really good job getting up the field in those first couple of laps with all the schlamazel going on with Weber and his compatriots, and managed to do quite well in improving their positions in that early part of the race.
Lap 13, Sebastian Buemi is in P7, and the term cage rattling is emailed to me. I'm not sure yet, but Buemi seems to be having an outstanding race. Fairly, it looked, no rookie mistakes, a nice mature
actually,
start.
As I recall, he makes one, there's one where we get to see him make one during the race.
But I expect that.
And it wasn't, but it wasn't a drastic one. It's not nearly as bad as, Nakajima's sophomore mistake a little bit later in the race.
Exactly. But, Sebastian Vettel pits on lap 16, 11.9 second stop. And Nico Rosberg pits as well, but they have a little problem with the left front wheel.
Yeah, wasn't sure what was going on. And it looked to me like they were having trouble either with the gun or the nut. And they were having trouble either getting the... I couldn't remember if they were having trouble getting the tire off or if they were having trouble getting it on. But they were having trouble with that tire and the nut, and it took them a little bit longer than it probably should have.
And it cost them a few positions.
Yeah, it did cost him. You probably, by the end of the race, it probably cost him at least one, a couple of points.
Lap 17, Jenson Button, flying lap, 1:28.020, almost getting into the 127s. And on lap 18, Kaz Nakajima, not sure what happened. For a minute there, I thought he might have had a suspension failure, but I think he dropped the rear wheel on the curves at between turn 3 and 4, and not a kablamo, but an El Smasho into the wall.
Yeah, I think what happened is that he caught the curb with the back tires, and it kicked his rear end out, and he lost control of the car.
Completely.
And into the wall.
And that was a fairly high-speed shunt.
The thing that really surprised me about this accident is it takes three freaking laps for them to get the safety car on the track.
This isn't Monaco, Steven. They're looking for the rubber gloves.
Well, I'm looking at the big chunks of wing in the race line, and it's like, what are you guys waiting for? And then at the when they take the safety, they like three laps over, like they're making up for it after they've cleaned the whole accident up.
And interesting enough, the safety car is deployed, but right after the accident, I think a few seconds before the safety car gets deployed, Buemi, Rubens Barrichello, Timo Glock all pit, and Jenson Button also pits.
Yeah, it was almost like they delayed the, like they knew that these guys were ready to pit, and so they delayed the deployment of the safety car till these guys came in.
Which was strange, but that was the reason why Jenson Button had put in that final fast lap, with a 1:28.020. He was getting ready to pit and had to bang in a few fast ones. Lap 19, the safety car comes out. Giancarlo Fisichella, Fernando Alonso, and Nelson Piquet pit. But Giancarlo Fisichella does a strange mistake, and he overshoots the pit box.
Yeah, that was bizarre. Unusual.
It was bizarre, and they had to back up the car. It was very strange, not a typical mistake from Giancarlo.
No, and not something you see, especially in Formula One. You rarely see anybody overshoot their pit box because you can see it readily, unlike some other series where they're so packed together that it's really easy to end up swinging past one. But that was kind of odd. One of the things that the guys on the broadcast mentioned might have had sun in his eyes kind of thing, where he just didn't pick them up in time, and or he something didn't gel when he went to hit the brakes.
So on lap 20, this is the order: Jenson Button, Sebastian Vettel, Massa, Robert Kubica, Nelson Piquet still in there, Kimi Raikkonen, Nico Rosberg, Yano Trulli, Sebastian Buemi, and Rubens Barrichello in the top 10. And Sebastian Vettel's got some good pace, and he's counting on catching Jenson Button.
He's looking really solid and isn't having too, he's throwing down laps. You know, Button's not able to stretch his lead on him, so, and we know this kid can be quick.
And what I found very weird was when they were following the safety car, because, as you said, it took three laps, I believe, to clear the CAS wreckage. Felipe Massa kept locking up the brakes.
Yeah.
Trying to keep, I presume, trying to keep heat into the brakes, but he was the only one that kept locking them up. You see the puffs of smoke. Boom, boom.
Yeah, which can't be good for your tires.
No, and I found that very interesting. I think he really had an imbalance in the front-to-back ratio of the for the brakes.
His bias was off,
and it was, I was surprised that they weren't telling him to adjust that, but he continued to lock up the brakes, and it did look odd. The safety car does come in on lap 23, I believe, and on lap 24, Nelson Piquet
24 lap, the safety car comes in
lap 24, then Nelson Piquet, who, it looked like Nico Rosberg was trying to pass him. He is fighting, locks him up, and loses total control.
And just gone. And just
in
left
turn
him.
One.
Yeah, and what they basically, the story we got after the race is that apparently he had a brake failure, which caused him to lock him up.
Are we sure it was a brake failure, Steven?
I've got a one. Well,
are we giving him?
You know what the thought? My thought was is that he was beating the brake so hard, trying to stay in front of Rosberg, that he basically destroyed his brakes, because one of the things that happens, particularly in Albert Park, in it's one of those tougher tracks on brakes, just because of the type of course it is. And I'm just thinking he just destroyed them, and that he had brake failure because he basically broke them.
But I think sometimes you're still early in the race, let the other guy go, don't crash.
Yeah, so we'll have to take his word for it that they failed him.
Jenson Button keeps the lead. Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso pass the Toyota. And on lap 25, it's Jenson Button, Sebastian Vettel, Felipe Massa, Robert Kubica, Kimi Raikkonen, and Yarno Trulli. And really, the gap between Jenson Button and Sebastian Vettel is only 2 seconds on lap 26. Vettel doing a great job.
Yep.
Buemi is doing an outstanding job as well. Because Bourdais is a little further back.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was. Sebastian Bourdais did not have a good weekend. He qualifying, he was having a hard time during the race keeping up with the field, and Buemi was looking better. And, you know, after watching practices, I didn't think that was going to be the case. Buemi did not look very strong in the practices, and then we get to the quali and the race, and he picks it up.
Well, maybe Bourdais was still fatigued from the Sebring.
Yeah, there's a good chance that, you know, first he runs the 12-hour race the weekend before, and then he's got to get, you know, it's another, what I think, it's like a 12 or 13-hour flight from the States, from the west coast of the States to Australia. So we're talking probably, you know, 18-hour airtime for him after running the race at Sebring. So, you know, maybe he was feeling the ill effects of trying to pull those two weekends in a row.
We'll give him that much, Stephen. I like that. Lap 28, Nico Rosberg is trying to get past Sebastian Buemi, and Buemi holds his own line here. Says, no, Nico, you are not going to intimidate me. I am Swiss.
Yeah, and he was doing a good job. I believe this is the point in the race where he makes that little rookie mistake that ends up letting Nico get by him a little bit later.
Exactly, lap 29. Adrian Sutil is dicing it up with his teammate Fisichella, and sure enough gets by. I don't know what happened there.
I think he was a little bit lighter on fuel, and maybe we had some team orders.
I think Fisichella was just spacing out.
Yeah, probably.
Fisichella should have held the line, and he's the senior dude.
Yeah, maybe he's thinking about a pizza recipe or something.
And, of course, lap 30 now in this 2009 season, all the drivers, after they have an accident or they don't finish the race, they have to speak with the press. It's mandatory.
Yeah, they've got to make themselves available.
Exactly, and of course Nelson Piquet comes out and says he had brake failure, as you earlier stipulated to.
But was he really? They didn't have the interview with him on Speed TV's coverage. Was he snarky, like he usually is?
No, he wasn't. He was. You could tell he was apologetic to the team. You know, the same weenie kind of attitude we heard last year when he crashes and says, "I'm sorry."
Yeah, because when Windsor interviewed him on the grid at the beginning of the race, he was kind of snarky.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, he is a PK.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some lineage there. But no, I watched the BBC coverage, and he seemed to be all right, but he seemed a little bit tired. Lap 31, Felipe Massa pits with a 10.9-second stop, goes on the hard tires, comes out in P14. Not a great day for Felipe and Ferrari in general.
No, not a good day for Ferrari in general. It was a rough day. What can you say? I was watching Speed did a little season preview, and they're like, oh, we expect to see Mercedes or McLaren and Ferrari at the front of the grid. Yeah. Not.
Yeah, not even close. Lap 32, Nico Rosberg is still stuck behind Mr. Buemi. Lap 33, Jarno Trulli pits, goes with the hard compound. Lap 34, Robert Kubica puts in a flying lap. Fast lap of the race, 127.989, and right after that, Adrian Sutil pits after his terrific pass on his teammate, Giancarlo Fisichella. Lap 35, Mark Webber pits, and Mark Webber's not having a great race. And he seems to not have a great race when he's on Australia.
Yeah, well, not only that, but he really took it in the shorts in that schlamazel in the first on the first lap, because it cost him a lap. He's up, you know, three laps into the race, he's already a lap down.
I don't like it. No, Rubinho was doing a better job.
Well, Rubinho's got a car that's really quick.
I agree, but Sebastian Vettel seems to be doing pretty good. Once again, we have a little cage rattling going on here, Stephen.
Will be interesting to see as we get further into the season, you know, if Webber isn't impeded by another car, how well he can make that car run in relation to Vettel's.
Lap 37, runs. Jenson Button has a 5-second lead over Mr. Vettel. Lap 38, Robert Kubica, Kimi Raikkonen, both pit. Both good stops, 7.6 seconds for one and 7.8 for the Kempster. They both go on the hard compound. Lap 40, Timo Glock spins, trying to pass Fernando Alonso, and Kimi Raikkonen gets by while this happens. First big mistake from Timo. Not unusual, not sure what happened there, but it made for great.
Yeah, he is one driver who seems to pay too much attention to his mirrors sometimes and gets a little rattled when he has people coming up behind him.
Exactly. Lap 43, Lewis Hamilton pits, Kimi Raikkonen pits, and Lewis Hamilton comes out, exiting the pits in front of Felipe Massa. And right when that happens, Kimi Raikkonen goes into the wall, but seems to have saved it, and then spins and continues into P16, and he's able to continue with the car. And I thought for sure that thing was completely screwed up.
Yeah. Obviously not screwed up enough to prevent him from continuing.
Yeah, and what's really sad is on lap 46, you could see Felipe Massa beginning to slow, and he's got some kind of el problemo.
Yeah, basically, he doesn't lose it completely. The car's still able to move, but he's got no power. I don't recall seeing any explanation of that. You know, maybe something like a hydraulic failure where he couldn't shift gears or something like that. And again, Ferrari with a technical glitch, which is not what we typically see from, you know, especially the last 2 years. Ferrari's been pretty rock solid in most cases. But
once again, last year they failed to finish the first race. And once again, Felipe Massa is slowing and the nightmare has begun.
Yeah, exactly.
Lap 46, Jenson Button pits, but it's not a smooth pit stop. They have a problem with the fueling rig. They switch rigs really quickly and he loses some time, but the karma is with the bronze.
Yeah, they obviously were at the DNF Chapel repeatedly over the earlier part
absolutely.
Of the week. Absolutely. Because they were blessed.
Jenson Button comes out and keeps the lead. Very impressive stuff. I was absolutely amazed. And by lap 48, Felipe Massa is out. And you could just see the frustration dripping.
Yeah. A rough weekend for Felipe. You know, the whole nine yards. And, the car wasn't performing. The car wasn't fast. And then to not be able to finish because the car doesn't make it the rest of the way. Rough day for Felipe.
Lap 48, while Felipe Massa is crying, Nico Rosberg puts in a fast lap with a 1:27.706. And Sebastian Vettel, once again, holding on to Jenson Button. And the gap is only 1.3 seconds. I'm really impressed with what Vettel is able to do with this Red Bull.
Yeah. We know that Adrian Newey can make a good car. Slick, well-designed. Typically in the past, especially in his heyday at McLaren, their biggest problem was always reliability. But it looks like he's managed to put together a fast and reliable car. So let's hope the season runs out. And because I would like to see Vettel continue to put the pressure on. You know, it looks like we need Vettel to put the pressure on the Bronze the way they're going at the moment. They, look like Ferrari of 2 years ago where nobody could seem to catch them.
And if the Bronze continue with this kind of pace, maybe some of these drivers' dream will be not to go to Ferrari, but to go to Braun.
Yeah, really. Go to an independent.
We'll see what happens. Jenson Button doing an outstanding job holding on to the lead. Lap 50, Timo Glock pits, and when he comes out, gets ahead of Sebastian Buemi. Rubens Barrichello pits on lap 51, comes out behind Nico Rosberg. Fernando Alonso pits, and we've really got a good race here. It's exciting. Robert Kubica is also doing an outstanding job and catching Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, he does it.
He has no curves, just like Vettel. And even though he's a big guy, he doesn't have that weight penalty with Kurz. And the BMW has some good pace.
Yeah, BMW is really strong, and it seems to be stronger without Kurz than it is with Kurz. Will be interesting to see how BMW plays it for the rest of the season. Again, I think that the FIA may have missed the boat a little bit in not setting it up better to, if you want people to be using Kurz, to make it more of an advantage rather than kind of a flat playing field. And maybe just that's this year's rules because it's being introduced. But, yeah, there needs to be a bit more of a gap there.
Rubens Barrichello passes Nico Rosberg on lap 53. On lap 54, Yano Trulli passes Nico as well, and he's struggling with his tires. You can just tell.
He's on the softs,
and they're just completely falling apart.
They're completely gone. He really can't keep up with anybody else because he doesn't have any grip.
No, he's just trying to stay on the track, and sure enough, Lewis Hamilton goes by him as well. And Robert Kubica on lap 55, I thought for sure he was going to get by Sebastian Vettel.
This is one of those racing incident situations. And I'm looking at this, and I think, after watching this a couple of times, that Kubica's got him. But I think Vettel ends up making contact because he doesn't have any grip left in his tires. He couldn't stop the car before he hits Robert Kubica. And tough luck for both of them, because both of these guys, basically, they're on the podium. It just depends on which one's going to be where.
And you know,
and they managed to take each other out.
You need to get the big picture. Vettel should have let him go.
Yeah.
Instead of fighting.
And I think maybe he was ready to, but when he went to open the door, he couldn't.
The loss of those valuable points could come back and haunt you at the end of the season.
Yeah, especially someone like Vettel, who was so strong. And then Kubica, too, for that matter. He's apparently able to get what he needs out of the BMW and could be fighting later in the season.
And, of course, this accident deploys the safety car.
And rats. But because we get to finish the race.
Behind the safety car.
Behind the safety car.
Yeah, but Kimi Raikkonen pits on lap 56 as the safety car is deployed. And he pits. Comes back out.
Pits again.
And he pits again.
Yeah.
And he realizes, no finito.
Gotta wonder if maybe, just gotta wonder if the failure he had was similar to the failure that Felipe had. And that basically they lost the hydraulic line, you know, lost hydraulics or some portion. Maybe the curse, you know, locked up.
Yeah. Now, while this was happening, first I saw Jenson Button first. Rubens Barrichello second. I mean, Rubens Barrichello, once again, has the luck of the Irish and is now in P2. I saw Lewis Hamilton in P3, but then all of a sudden that changed and Yano Trulli was in P3. And I got a little bit confused, but I accepted it. I figured...
I think you weren't the only one that got confused, because I think Yano thought that, you know, there was some question as to whether or not Lewis had inadvertently passed him and then let him go. Or fights for, you know, that Trulli just passed him.
And well, we had a safety car.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure they were aware of where they were in the order at the time of the deployment, and it ends up coming back to bite Yano.
Exactly. So anyway, the safety car does pull in, and Jenson Button, all he has to do is cross the finish line, which is a few yards away, and bingo, the Cinderella story is official.
Trulli official, considering the starters in 1-2, finish 1-2, and Braun not only sweeps the front row in qualifying, they sweep 1-2 in the race.
And even with that terrible start from Rubinho, he manages to stick it in there, stay in the race, not make the mistakes, let other people make mistakes, and he finishes right behind Jenson Button, and I was very impressed with that. He's absolutely irresistible.
Basically, and you kind of look at it and you go, okay, would Senna have been able to do that? And a rookie driver, maybe not. And so, you know, Braun looks like a genius for keeping Rubinho on the payroll.
Yep. And, of course, Sebastian Buemi, the only rookie in 2009, finished in P8.
Getting a point for his team.
So, wrap it up, Steven.
So, we finished the race with Rubinho. I mean, with Jenson Button winning the race, Rubens Barrichello in second. Yano Trulli finishes third, but takes a 25-second penalty, knocking him out of the points. Therefore, Lewis Hamilton actually finishes third. Timo Glock in fourth. Fernando Alonso fifth. Nico Rosberg in sixth. Sebastian Buemi in seventh. And his teammate, Sebastian Bourdais, also gets a point in eighth. They actually ended up finishing the race pretty close together. So, you know, maybe the cage isn't quite so rattled. Adrian Sutil finishes 9th, Heidfeld in 10th, Fisichella in 12th, and somewhere in there I think is where Yano fell out when he lost his points, because I think he ended up finishing 10th or 11th with his 25-second penalty. Mark Webber finishes 13th. Sebastian Vettel 14th and Kubica 15th. Sebastian Vettel was able to get his car back to, or nearly back to the pits after basically taking off. He was driving on three tires for quite a while. Unusual for a Adrian Newey design, because typically when Adrian Newey cars fail, they disintegrate. So something good for to look forward for them there. Kubica 15th and Raikkonen is the final car to be classified in 16th. Retired are Massa, Piquet, Nakajima, and Kovalainen. Piquet and Nakajima to accidents. The other three, or the other two, to retirements. And Kovalainen's was a direct result of the accident he was involved in on the first lap. So a very interesting weekend in Australia. A lot of fun. Some of the best racing I can remember in a long time. A lot of racing instead of, you know, the Formula One train that we've kind of seen the last 2 years. Everybody kind of competitive, and I think one of the advantages to having the two disparate compounds is that when you get someone out there on the mediums and someone's just coming out on the softs, they can actually race them and get by them. So that was kind of fun. It was fun to watch. Good weekend overall, I think.
Absolutely, and we have a few quotes here from the drivers. This is from Felipe Massa. We need to improve the car very quickly. His experience when
and
we
quite
see
a bit.
When we see a car and is 1 second in front, to improve 1 second from one day to another is very difficult. I don't know if it is possible. Massa also told reporters in Australia that he believed Ferrari were in the mix of the chasing pack to Braun GP, but the team's true competitive nature was hard to measure given the trouble they had making the tires work for them in Melbourne. He says, on the soft tires, we were struggling. On the hard tires, we were struggling a lot to get the tires to work. If you take the whole race, we had the Braun, which was on another planet. Then we had the Red Bull. Vettel was quite strong, quite a good pace, maybe a bit better than the Ferraris. So there you have it. Felipe's suffering, and we'll see what happens. I think Kimi Raikkonen just shrugs it off and goes straight to the motorhome. Vettel did concede that maybe he should have let Robert Kubica go. At the time I turned in, I was ahead, but I couldn't keep up speed in the corner, and Robert was on a harder tire, so he was much quicker. At the time we collided, he was in front, but I had nowhere to go. I couldn't stop the car or turn the right, and my tires were gone. Turned to the right, that is, and my tires were gone. Once again, a tire issue.
Yeah, I think he may have been able to let Robert get by if he could have stopped, but the tires were so far along that he couldn't, there wasn't any grip to slow the car down enough to let Robert get past.
He does say that, I'm sorry to the team and also to Robert, as it didn't just mean the end of my race, but his as well. So
and the stewards accepted his apology and gave him a 10-place penalty for the Malaysian race.
Exactly. So quite brutal. And, of course, Yano truly got a 25-second penalty for actually passing Lewis Hamilton during the safety car. So that relegated him way back, and everybody moved up. And that made Lewis Hamilton a podium finisher in P3. And, of course, Buemi went up. Bourdais, who was actually finished in the end right behind Buemi,
yep,
got the final point in P8. So, and Fernando finishes in 5. So, not too shabby in the end for Bourdais. And but I've already read that some people are saying that he is in the Scuderia Toro Rosso doghouse or Casa de Perro.
Well, we'll see. It's the first race of the season. Sebastian Bourdais hasn't raced exceptionally well in Australia in the 2 times he's been there, so see how he does next weekend. You know, I'm not going to write him off. I'm kind of a Sebastian Bourdais fan after his years here in the Champ Car Series and the fact that he was probably one of the first drivers of any note that ever gave F1 Weekly an interview.
There you go. And not only that, but I thought that Lewis Hamilton had a really good race starting at the end of the grid in the back. And, of course, I thought the Toyotas did outstanding considering they started from pit row.
Yeah, considering they started from pit row, you know, if Yarno hadn't kind of had a brain freeze there under the safety car, phenomenal race. They would have, you know, been second in points.
Lewis Hamilton is quoted as saying, it was one of my better races that I've driven simply because of the way the car drove. It's the hardest thing I've ever had to drive in my life, Hamilton said. Also, Norbert Hogg went out and said, an equally impressed Hogg added he drove an excellent race under very difficult circumstances and proved his world championship class and pedigree.
Yeah, well, if you look at it, it was very Kimi Räikkönen-esque from the days, what was it, 2005, when he was consistently starting at the back because of an engine or gearbox or some sort of penalty and was racing his way up to the field to get onto the podium. So kudos to Lewis Hamilton for a good race, considering the start he was forced to take.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens in Malaysia next weekend. I don't think there's enough time for Ferrari to have any kind of development that'll increase their pace. The compounds that Bridgestone brings to Malaysia, which should be a warmer climate, will be critical for Ferrari. Also, I expect Renault to pick up the pace, but we'll see. The long straights might suit Fernando. Will Nelson Piquet make a mistake again and not finish the race?
Well, I think one of the challenges that Renault was facing in Australia was that they weren't showing good top-end speed. They weren't showing really good straight-line speed. So hopefully they've already begun to rectify that and will bring that to Malaysia.
Either Fernando loses more weight or we get rid of Kurs.
You know, if I'm Flavio and I'm looking at the non-Kurs cars, I'm thinking about yanking it because, you know, the weight penalty versus the benefits, I don't know.
I agree. So let's see what happens.
But you take that distraction away from the driver, too, that he isn't having to think about using that button. He can just race.
I expect Ferrari to continue to struggle in Malaysia. I think we're going to see an equal performance from Braun. Because they simply have the pace.
They've got the package right now. Their car, you know, that's one of the things that'll be interesting to see from them over the course of the season. Will they be able to improve the car as much as some of the higher priced competitors are able to improve their car?
I also, Nico Rosberg needs to pick up the pace when it comes from practice to qualifying. He's so good in practice, he needs to deal with it in qualifying.
He does finish the race with the fastest lap at a 127.
I agree.
706. But he needs to, like you say, he needs to bring that to the race. He needs to bring that to qualifying. Williams has given him a phenomenally good car compared to the rest of the field. The fact that he can put that pace on it, he just needs to get it consistently throughout the entire race.
He needs to get on the front row and prove to Frank that he is the driver that he can do it. I don't think Kaz Nakajima is going to do it. But Nico's got a good car, and we've got to put the excuses aside.
No, Williams has given him the car this year. You know, now it's his turn to step up and prove that he's deserving of that package.
I agree. So we'll see what happens in Malaysia. Also, I think Bourdais needs to outpace Buemi in a number of races to keep his seat.
For the long term, if he doesn't outpace Buemi throughout the season, net, he will not be there next year.
Exactly. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. I had a really good time watching the Australian GP. It was outstanding. It was fun. And the pit babes were outstanding as well.
Woohoo!
So there you have it. Stay tuned for the next podcast, the midweek podcast, where we'll have more of the historical significance of the Braun 1-2 finish in the land of Oz. So good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.